I want to bring into our reflection this morning two events that have taken place in the last number of months. One that took place July 9th, just a couple of weeks ago. There was, and you can see this on YouTube, it's a little video, and it shows the Quebec Legislature, the National Assembly. There's a ladder set up at the front where the large wall rises up above the speaker's chair, ladder, A-frame at ladder. Fellow walks in a blue sort of jacket. He's got white gloves on. He comes out. He climbs the ladder very slowly. He reaches up and takes hold of the cross with the crucified Christ on it, lifts it carefully off its hook, descends from the ladder, goes over to a sort of square rectangular box, lays it in there on top of a piece of, looks like a white sheet, and then steps back from it and then disappears from the frame. And the camera zooms back to now the blank wall above the speaker's chair. Now, you and I know that we can look at that action and say, well, yes, that's the Canada that we've become. We are a Canada that's multilingual, multicultural, with many religious traditions and no religious traditions claimed by many, etc. And if we are going to have the adjudication of our collective life in a space like the National Assembly or whatever it is, then you cannot have a symbol of a particular one group that means much to them, if you're going to have a fairness expressed to all people and so on. That's what we say, right? That's what we say. So the crucifix that's hung above the speaker's chair for decades, and indeed you could say even before Confederation, in terms of influencing the life and shape and formation of that culture, it's gone. And the official text that came out after that on the 10th of July said, visitors will be able to view the artifact on display in the space between the blue room and the red room. And, you know, okay, so it's a post-Christian Canada. We've said this, we've heard this, it's just another sign of that, in which the Christian community, regardless of its lengthy influence in the shaping of the Canada that is disembedded in terms of its influence and stature within the culture. There, we are a culture of many religions. Okay, let's have that image. Second one, stark, my gosh, Holy Week, Monday of Holy Week. The news feeds crackled with the images of flames leaping from the roof of the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. And we tuned it in, and there it was, with smoke billowing across Paris. And, you know, it didn't take a moment before, as you looked at that scene, to realize the water cannons weren't reaching the roof, it was too high, and the cathedral was going to go. And, you know, as commentators said, it took, what, an hour and a half, an hour and three quarters, and that roof, that forest of trees, harvested in the 1200s, was gone. And not just that, but the aerial images that came out later that night, could have been a drone or whatever, looking down on the cathedral, you know how they are, with the long sort of nave and then two apses in the center, looking down on the cathedral and darkness all around and then red fire inside it all, like total. And you realize the enormity of the loss. So suddenly, I mean, it took 250 years to build. It was 850 years standing at the center of Paris and so on, and crowds gathered and wept in disbelief and sang chants. One of the commentators said, it will fall now to Emmanuel Macron to console and articulate the shock and grief, which Macron then did. And he made a consoling statement, and then he articulated, we will rebuild, right? That's what happened. And those are really important words, I think, that at a time of loss, we need a voice or voices that will console and articulate both. Less than 24 hours later, it was announced that over 1 billion euros had been committed in pledges to rebuild the cathedral. And almost as quickly as that outpouring had occurred of generosity, there were voices that were saying, well, why couldn't that money have been used for the poor? Where have we heard that statement before? In Holy Week in Bethany, Jesus is at a special dinner in Bethany, and they're sort of strategizing about what to do, and it's getting tense. And all of a sudden, into that conversation comes Mary with a jar of precious ointment, and she kneels down, pours it over Jesus, and weeps. and there's recalling around the table, and someone says, I think it's Judas who's given the words, who says, you know, what a waste, like, can't this money have been used to feed the poor? And there's those voices that immediately, it's just ironic that that starts happening in Paris at that time. Like, we've got so many other social issues, why can't we use that billion euros in some other way? Just curious that there's those who want to anoint the cathedral and rebuild it and refashion and so on, and then there's this other voice. But the really deeper question that starts to surface as the roof is gone and the flames start to die out, that really begins to surface is, for whom will the cathedral be rebuilt? To whom does it belong? Whose cathedral is it? I mean, yes, it belongs to the French government, and that's because of some secularizing action that took place a number of years ago. But for 900 years, it has stood in the heart of Europe, in the center of Paris, in the name of Jesus Christ, a Christian Catholic cathedral. And if it's now to be rebuilt, after all that extensive damage, in what way do you refashion that to express the society that now is France? Is there an opportunity to reflect on how it is refashioned and rebuilt that can perhaps represent the inclusion of all people, the inclusion of God? 5 days later, there was an article in the New York Times. Ross Douthat was a columnist, lamenting, quote, a palpable desire to claim the still smoking Notre Dame for some abstract idea of liberal modernity. You know, and you think, well, why do we have to wait for sort of a secular voice to say something and then we react to it? Like, where's the religious imagination that says, okay, there's an opportunity here, how do we do this? How do we do this differently and in a new way? The inferno has taken the roof off. So how do we reshape this in a way that expresses, at a time of the greatest migration of the human population ever in history, and the blending and mixing of cultures and religions and traditions and voices and languages, how do we create something that expresses the inclusivity and love of God for the world? I mean, Jesus doesn't come just for the church, we say. Jesus came for the world. How do you do that? Or do you just put a roof back on it and sort of kind of seal it away, claim it again, and a kind of reassertion of institutionalized old power? As we say in our Christian tradition in Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. How do we express that? So, two images, a cross being removed from the National Assembly, a sign of the times, the sudden burning of the roof of Notre Dame, and a whole host of new questions coming forward, important questions. You put those together and you say to yourself, all right, what's this? The reason why I've chosen those is because what we know, all of us know this, is that there's a new reality that's sweeping across the Canadian church, Catholic, Protestant, it is sweeping across, changing us in all sorts of ways, faster and accelerating in a way that we had not anticipated. You could say there's a kind of fire that's going across, but it doesn't have to be that, but it's changing us. We know that. And we've had for a couple of decades some really important questions around human sexuality. We've had some really important questions, indeed more, around our First Nations relationship and reconciliation and healing that. But there's another conversation that needs to come forward now, and it has to do, what are the next forms of the future church? And in what way to express the inclusivity and welcome of God to everyone? Let me tell you a story. There's a new church in Calgary, in a part of the city, where a lot of churches closed in the last number of years. Lots of young families, singles, etc., living in that area. And they don't know it, but the church that some of them are going to is actually backed up by an established church somewhere else, which has rented for Sundays a private school, an elementary school, and they offer 3 services on a Sunday. And it's geared for young families, young adults, etc., 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings, maybe. And what they do is they have 20 minutes of singing, 20 minutes of coffee, 20 minutes of teaching Doesn't that sound interesting? So if you have 20 minutes of singing, you can never be late for church. You just walk in and, okay, they're singing, I join in. But if you watch it, it will start with a contemporary piece of music, but it progresses, and the person at the front introducing the music leads it until you get to the point where I'm singing music that says I'm part of a Christian gathering worshiping God on this day. And then she gives a question to the group and says, here's the question when you're introducing yourself to each other over coffee. This is the question to ask somebody and just chat. So you go out for coffee for 20 minutes. I mean, it's a coffee culture. We know this. So you go off and you have your coffee, and then you come back, and the young woman at the front, this is 20 minutes of teaching now, she's got a microphone on, right, and a little sort of thing, and she doesn't begin, in the gospel today we heard, you know, she begins, have you ever seen a sign for wet paint? Yeah, are you the kind of person that, what do you do when you see a sign for wet paint? Are you the person that goes over and touches it to see if it's still wet? Let's see the hands of the people who go over and touch the wet paint. And she says, that's what we call temptation. And then she sort of pulls out her cell phone and says, this is a Galaxy S9, and I hear the S10 is out now. It's got the best camera on the market. You know, she goes like that. Now, she'll weave in the teaching of Christ and quote Christ, but you don't begin there. And after 20 minutes, there's prayers, and it's done. And for those who want to have communion, then there's a place for communion and stay there and gather around the table and bread and wine and the sacramental experience. First class educational program for the children and baby support and so on. And, you know, are we dumbing it down? No. We're opening another doorway, right? It's about opening another door in the life of the church to tell the great story that we tell as Christians. Here at St. Michael's, let's think about this for a moment. What do we have? We have this beautiful traditional service, which is deeply meaningful and honors the rich tradition that we have in this lovely setting, 9 o'clock. At 10:30, we've got another reality happening in the hall, and that's got another kind of sort of idiom of music and style that sort of grows out of Curcio and Nicky Gumbel, perhaps, and other such influences. But that's got its own life, and it's strong, and it's good. All right. So I was at the Food and Friends, for those who are visiting. Food and Friends happens every Monday night, and it's a meal that's open to the town. I walked in on Monday night, and I noticed, look at all the young people here. It's mostly young people, right? Look at all these young adults, and they're hungry. What was the prayer in the opening prayer today? We spoke, you know, we expressed it. Jesus came to give us food, to feed us with the bread of life. So they are hungry. How do we fashion a way that can also nurture their spiritual hunger, which may not, well, you know, you just have the deep, deep questions about meaning and life and how do I make choices and am I alone in the universe and all those existential questions that come in our 20s and so on that are deep. And is there a way to answer that? So when you think of us here in this parish, we've just been given a grant from the diocese to bring a second priest on board. And that will happen in the next couple of months. What's the opportunity in that as a community to open up a new way to reach out into that younger community that's here and resident that creates a way? When you look at the Cathedral of Notre Dame, the walls are still standing. The walls stand. The faith, the tradition, the scriptures, the bread and wine, the water for baptism, the walls are there, but how do we fashion a new life within it? You know, we've got the nave and the altar area and the two apses. Did you heard about the second oldest cathedral in England this past week was reported as creating a mini putt in one of the apses? Okay. Really? What's the main thing that we're about as a Christian community? Who matters? Who is God's love for in the world? We have an opportunity, and by God's grace, may we live into it creatively and imaginatively in the name of the living God. Thanks be to God.